from KQED.
From KQED Public Radio in San Francisco, I'm Michael Krasny.
Wouldn't it be nice if every time Meg Whitman told a lie, her nose would grow?
Jerry Brown, a lifetime in politics, a legacy of failure.
In our ongoing coverage of this year's election, we take on the political ads in the hour ahead and put them up to truth testing. How factual are the spate of negative campaign ads you hear on the radio or see on television or get in mailers? We'll run a reality check on political ads in the hour ahead. Forum is next, after this. From KQED Public Radio in San Francisco, I'm Michael Krasny. Good morning and welcome to this morning's Forum program. We all know mud flies in the profusion of negative ads and campaigns that hit the airwaves or become parts of political campaigns. Just Tuesday, Matt Lauer asked both California candidates if they would agree to promise to stop putting out negative campaign ads, and Jerry Brown said he would agree if Meg Whitman would. Meg Whitman, down in the polls, demurred. But how much is the content in the blitz of negative campaign ads truthful versus being loose with the facts or even distorting facts or outright lying? In our ongoing election coverage, we take on this hour the topic of political campaign ads and where the truth or reality get obscured or lost. Joining us is Evan Halper. He's Sacramento Bureau Chief for the Los Angeles Times, and he's in Sacramento this morning. Good morning, Evan Halper.
Good morning. Thanks for having me.
Glad to have you. Also glad to have Ken McLaughlin, who is political reporter for the San Jose Mercury News. He's in Los Angeles and joins us from L.A. Good morning, Ken McLaughlin.
Good morning. Good to be here.
Good to have you. And also with us is Professor Barbara O'Connor, Emeritus Professor of Communications and with the Institute for the Study of Politics and Media at Cal State University Sacramento with us from the state capitol. Barbara O'Connor, welcome.
Good morning, Michael.
Good morning. And let me begin with you, Barbara. Overall, this campaign, with all the money that's been spent, how different is it in terms of the distortions that we've been seeing in the negative campaigns from, say, previous campaigns, or is it?
Oh, I think it's about the same. There's just been more of it. You know, Meg Whitman has spent so much money. We've been inundated by ads, largely negative, from her against Poizner until the primary, and then against Brown subsequently. And I think there's a lot of voter fatigue, as evidenced by the reaction at the women's conference when people actually booed when asked whether they wanted to hear any more ads, basically, because they've all been like negative. And I think it's the quantity rather than a large difference in the type.
Well, you mentioned the women's conference, and I know you were there. There's actually a negative ad that came out of the women's conference. Let's hear it.
Would either of you or both of you be willing to make a pledge that you would end the negativity?
If she takes her negative ads as reasonably defined, and I'll take mine off, no question. If we do it together,
that's what I'm asking.
No problem. I pledge that right now.
I don't think we can take down the ads that talk about where Governor Brown stands on the issues. I just think it's not the right thing to do.
Well, we heard that heavy booing, and then things became a little bit confabulated after that, didn't they?
Oh, they did, yes. People started to walk out. I was with a group of corporate women who are not very political. And remember, it's largely Republican women who've been going for years. And they had been inspired for 2.5 hours before by the justices from the Supreme Court and Maria Shriver and Michelle Obama and, you know, everyone, Men Who Get It with Brian Williams. And the lack of humanity and understanding was palpable. And so they first booed and then they walked out.
Jerry Brown was kind of glossing over his original statement, wasn't he, though?
He was quiet for the first time in a long time. I think he sensed where the wind was going and just shut up. And Arnold Schwarzenegger was grinning like a Cheshire cat.
What about on the propositions, or for that matter, the Senate race? Again, pretty much standard or any different this time?
I think there's, you know, we always say every year, you and I have this conversation about how can we tolerate all these ads, and each year they grow exponentially. So much money is spent that the media time is booked on television and radio so early now. and they're doubling the price, and campaigns are meeting it to buy time around specific programs. I think people are just really tired of them. You know, the conventional wisdom is that they work, so we do them. My view of it is consultants get a percentage, so they do them. And after the election, I'd like to really study that to see whether or not people say ads made a difference.
Well, Evan Halper, Meg Whitman has 50, 60 consultants, I believe, all making fairly substantial salaries. They have to produce this sort of negative campaign ads to pay for their supper, so to speak. But we're getting more from Meg Whitman, I suppose, than we've seen in a long time, aren't we?
Yeah, it does seem like they're just everywhere. And it's interesting if you look at recent polling and how she's doing and what people think of her. There's kind of a backlash on these ads. I mean, not just the saturation and people being tired of sort of seeing, you know, commercial after commercial after commercial of hers, but there's this sense among a lot of voters, I think, and also among some editorial boards like the San Jose Mercury News, which its editorial endorsing Jerry said that, you know, Meg Whitman seems to have a problem with the truth. So, you know, these ads and some of the claims in these ads that aren't standing up have actually boomeranged on her.
Well, let's hear a couple of these. What I'd like to hear is, Danny, it's a Whitman ad followed by a Brown ad, and then we'll talk to Evan and deconstruct them a bit, and also Ken McLaughlin about this and Barbara O'Connor. In other words, first one is a Whitman ad.
The Jerry Brown story. The real story. 40 years in politics, and failure has followed him everywhere. In the 60s, Brown enters politics and later serves two terms as governor. His big spending turns a surplus into a billion-dollar deficit. Brown appoints liberal judges who fight the death penalty, supports billions in new taxes, and leaves the state with record unemployment of 11%. Failure. In the 80s, he runs for Senate, but Californians say no. He lobbies for a corporate polluter and works to send California jobs to China. Failure. The 90s saw Jerry run as a presidential candidate against Bill Clinton.
You know, he reinvents himself every year or two.
Failure. And in the 2000s, Jerry was mayor of Oakland, where he taxed everything from garbage to cable TV. Crime soared, and he damaged the school system so badly, the state had to take it over. Another failure. Jerry Brown. A lifetime in politics, a legacy of failure.
Well, there's a Meg Whitman ad that ran quite a bit. I thought before we did some deconstructing of that, we'd hear one of Jerry Brown's ads.
You know it's bad when the press asks if you'd take a lie detector test. Meg Whitman didn't tell the truth about not voting or about how long she lived in California. She got caught in insider deals at Goldman Sachs. She changed her story about physically abusing an employee. She campaigned as tough as nails on immigration, knowing her housekeeper of 9 years was undocumented. Her TV ads have been condemned as false and misleading. And even her hometown newspaper said Meg Whitman has demonstrated a loose relationship with the truth.
Well, there we have two examples of gubernatorial ads. And Evan Halper, there are fact distortions in both of them, aren't there?
Yeah, there certainly are. You know, as far as the ad that Whitman put out about Jerry Brown, you know, to call him sort of a big spending liberal when he was governor the first time around is certainly a distortion. If you know look at the clips, or you know, in Sacramento there are many people who are around. You know, he had a really tough relationship with the legislature because they kept wanting to spend money and he kept not wanting to. He's, you know, known as a tightwad, a cheapskate. You know, he vetoed several bills that involved spending, and he actually wound up getting overridden because of his, you know, cheapness. And yeah, he was one legislator who was around the time told me that his Department of Finance used to hide money from lawmakers at the time. They were so frustrated that he just wouldn't spend. You know, as far as billions of dollars in tax increases, you know, that claim has been generally debunked, that the taxes that people paid before Jerry Brown and the taxes that Californians paid when he left were actually less. The 11% unemployment is accurate, but you know, as the nation's unemployment rate was about that at the time, and so California usually has a worse unemployment rate than other parts of the country, and you know, in this case, it sort of had dropped to where everyone else was. You know, and the list goes on in that ad. And then, of course, the ad that the Brown campaign put up, you know, also has some distortions. The most obvious one is to just outright say that that Whitman knew her housekeeper was undocumented. It's just, you know, no one can prove that. In fact, you know, the Whitman campaign has provided numerous documents that the housekeeper provided to them and the housekeeper's agency, you know, a social security card, a license, et cetera. So I don't see how the Brown campaign can just come out and say that that she knew she was hiring an undocumented worker.
There's also we've seen in the gubernatorial campaign, and let me go to you on this, Ken McLaughlin. I know this, some of this is really hard to sort out, and I want to commend all of you for doing yeoman work on this. But the ad that was put out by the California Teachers Association essentially said that Meg Whitman would cut $7 billion and lay off 100,000 teachers. And there were no plans along those lines at all. I mean, it was simply based on what she said would be proposed cuts from the state budget. And on the other hand, they've been trying to, the Meg Whitman campaign has been trying to pretty much paint Jerry Brown as a total puppet of the unions. And he's certainly gotten a lot of money from the unions. And that CTA campaign ad speaks for itself as far as union support for Brown. And we'll hear it in a moment. But I think one has to go back and sort all this out. Then there's a lot of sort of sifting and winnowing that has to go on to find out where the truth lies.
Yeah, I think of all the ads that were run by on the Brown side, and as well as by the independent expenditure groups that are supporting Brown, probably the CTA ad was probably the worst, because what it did is just assume that she said, you know, she would cut the state budget by $15 billion, although she has never specified exactly where. So maybe, you know, you could argue that maybe she opened herself up to charges. But the theory was that since about half of the education spending of the spending of the general fund is through education, that if you cut, you know, $15 billion, that's, you know, $7 billion or so would come out of the education budget. You know, the Women campaign has said they have never said that, which is true. So you could probably make an argument that that is a pretty egregious falsehood.
It's an egregious falsehood, but then, you know, we've got the Brown campaign saying that she knew her housekeeper was undocumented. We've got, in fact, there were those ads that were saying that Jerry Brown was on an allowance for many years. What was that all about?
I don't think there was any truth to that at all. I don't know, even know where that came from.
It came from left field, I think.
Yeah. I think it was just basically made up as far as I can tell.
So you can make up something out of whole cloth and put it in an ad, and there's no accountability? Nobody answers?
Well, I think the accountability comes from, you know, newspapers that, you know, running reality checks. And I think actually of the two campaigns, the Brown campaign actually did a very good job of disputing charges line by line. I mean, almost virtually every ad that went up was disputed factually, and generally, I think the fact checkers really did a good job of sticking to the facts, and I'm surprised actually that the Whitman campaign didn't do the same thing. I think it probably would have allowed for maybe a little bit more balance in the fact checking. I know the Whitman campaign thinks that the press, I mean, and organizations like factcheck.org came down a little bit too hard on them. But I think, you know, part of it was that they came up with a narrative of Jerry Brown as a tax and spend liberal, and they try to take the selective facts and fit it into the narrative. I mean, you know, they refer repeatedly to Jerry Brown raising taxes, and as far as I can tell, and I've checked this with a lot of people, the only taxes that were raised during the Brown administration was a 2 cent per gallon gasoline tax, which actually took effect after Jerry left office, but it had very wide support from the County Board of Supervisors. In fact, if you remember, back in the late 70s, Jerry Brown got a lot of criticism for letting California's roads deteriorate and, you know, worrying more about alternative transportation sources. And so at the end of the administration, there was this clear acknowledgement that the taxes had to go up. But another anecdote to that story is that, okay, taxes went up 2 cents per gallon, but it was actually George Dukmejian that had doubled the gas tax, I think, from about 9 cents a gallon to 18 cents a gallon.
Yeah, I don't think Jerry Brown had anything to do with retirement being lowered to 55 either, as far as the pensions were concerned.
No, I mean, it's a stretch on that one, too, because, I mean, he did sign a law, you know, allowing public unions to collectively bargain. And you can argue that because he signed that law, eventually the law that Gray Davis signed in 1999, which was really the law that was almost irresponsible in allowing pensions to climb enormously. And it was at the time that the stock market was riding high, and basically the unions were able to organize to argue that, you know, you can give people additional benefits and it's not going to cost you any money because we have so much money coming into the system. There was a thing called superfunding where the cities were not even having to contribute money for their retirement.
I remember it well. You can get nostalgic for those flush days. But that was,
yes.
You say, Ken, that was under Gray Davis.
Yeah, but to blame the generous pensions on Jerry Brown, I think, is just not sound logic. And also, actually, Ronald Reagan was one of the first governors that actually signed a law allowing for the creation of, you know, public employee unions. So,
well, you were talking about taxes. Let's hear a couple of ads. This first one from the Whitman campaign.
Taxes. So, who called Prop 13 a fraud and a ripoff? Jerry Brown. Who raised the gas tax as governor and pushed for higher sales taxes? Jerry Brown. Who tried 5 times to raise property taxes in Oakland? Jerry Brown. Who supported higher statewide income taxes? Jerry Brown. And who says if elected, he'll ask voters for even more new taxes? Jerry Brown. Governor Jerry Brown again? Hide your wallet.
Well, there it is. Let me just actually juxtapose that with one from the Brown campaign about capital gains taxes.
Our state has a huge deficit. Meg Whitman's plan will make it billions worse by eliminating the capital gains tax for wealthy investors, including herself. Economists say her plan will rip a hole in the budget and is deeply flawed. Analysts for the LA Times say Whitman's plan is a pure handout to the rich, creating a huge risk to schools and public safety. Jerry Brown's against this unfair giveaway because it will take billions from our children when we can least afford it. Get California working again for all of us.
Well, Evan Halper, those two ads, sort of both distorted again where the truth is concerned, aren't they?
Yeah. I mean, in the case of Prop 13, Jerry Brown did in fact call it a fraud and a ripoff. But what the ad leaves out is once it passed and voters decided that's the way they wanted to go by, I think, 65%. He got right to work implementing it. And by the time he was running for reelection, he was doing a commercial with Howard Jarvis, who was endorsing him because he was so happy with the way that Brown had put Prop 13 into action. The probably the biggest glaring distortion in that ad is where it says he plans to push for more taxes. He's been very clear in this campaign that if there's going to be any discussion of taxes, it would go to the voters. He's never said his plan for the budget is to do that and try to get a tax hike. The backup for the ad the Whitman campaign has provided is one kind of disjointed interview that Brown did a while ago, which doesn't really reach the you can't logically reach the conclusion from it that his plan is to raise taxes. So that seems like a pretty obvious distortion. Now, as far as the capital gains taxes, Whitman does want to reduce capital gains tax or eliminate the capital gains tax in California. Whether that would take billions of dollars from school children, is hard to say. It would create problems for the budget, though. It would, that's a lot of revenue that California relies on would evaporate if the capital gains tax were to go away.
And again, Evan Halper is Sacramento Bureau Chief for the Los Angeles Times, and Professor Barbara O'Connor, also with us this morning, is Emeritus Professor of Communication with the Institute for the Study of Politics and Media at Cal State University, Sacramento. And Barbara, let's find out from you how the Fiorina Boxer Senate campaign has been going. There seems to be a general sense that Well, again, there's distortion in both, but that the Boxer people have tried to stay pretty much, with the facts more or less.
That's the case. You know, they too are better at following up on Fiorina's ads. Everybody who gets email from them knows that the minute an ad comes out, you get 17 sites that say it's not true. So that may be a function, and we haven't talked about this, of having staff that are really used to dealing with the media and opinion leaders. And both Whitman and Fiorina have primary consultants who are outsiders and don't normally run in the day-to-day circles of opinion formation in Sacramento. But it, too, has been an unrelenting set of negative ads, half-truths, misinterpretations. And you made a comment to Ken earlier, which I think is illustrative. When you start with a rhetorical vision and then try to find the facts, it's difficult. And that's what both of the Republican campaigns have done. They share that. That's about the only thing they share, but they do share that. And, you know, we much prefer to start with the facts and then come with the rhetorical vision. And that's not been the case.
Chris, you wonder, I mean, for example, in the gubernatorial campaign, Brown has been painted by Whitman as failing the schools in Oakland. And, you know, there was really very little he could do. And the Boxer campaign has created a picture of Carly Fiorina as outsourcing all these jobs and being out for herself for a great deal of money. And it's not the whole story. I mean, she may have outsourced a great number of jobs, but she also was fired from her job, and she didn't necessarily have – and everybody in Silicon Valley was outsourcing jobs. And as far as being out for herself, a lot of the money was stock options. So there's a way of kind of spinning in all this that can be factual and at the same time, well, sort of leaning in a spinning way toward what you want to say negatively about your candidate. Let me have you hear a couple of these ads, very short ads from the Fiorina campaign, followed by the Boxer campaign.
Barbara Boxer failed to protect California jobs, praises the stimulus plan, while 2.25 million Californians are unemployed. Trillions in deficits, billions in taxes. Our hopes crushed by Washington. The legacy of Barbara Boxer. We can change Washington, but not unless we change the people we send there.
I'm Carly Fiorina, and I approve this message.
Carly Fiorina. She's against banning assault weapons, and that's reckless and dangerous. She's for risky new oil drilling that could threaten our jobs. Fiorina's plan would mean slashing Social Security and Medicare, which would devastate seniors. And she'd make abortion a crime. No wonder Fiorina is endorsed by Sarah Palin. Carly Fiorina, just too extreme for California.
I'm Barbara Boxer, and I approve this message.
We get these deep voices, Kim McLaughlin, that tell us that Barbara Boxer is responsible for almost every kind of ill that has come out of Washington, and Carly Fiorina is off there in an extreme place where she will brook no quarter. And, of course, again, these are really distortions of these people and what they represent, aren't they?
Yeah, I mean, it's the logic in the first ad that you played was that somehow the stimulus plan had almost made it worse in California. And that's really a stretch. I mean, I think almost any, you know, economist would say, yes, there was some effect of the stimulus plan. It probably made it better. I think you can come up with an argument was if the $814 billion that was spent didn't make it a little bit better or a lot better, I think is a good argument for economists to have.
Ken, hold that thought because we're coming up on a break and I want to give out the phone number and have our listeners join us in this discussion. I know there are many of you who have responses to these negative ads and to, sort of the playing loose with the truth. If you do, please join us. It's toll-free, 866-733-6786. We welcome your calls, 866-733-6786, or email us, forum@kqed.org. I'm Michael Krasny. This is Forum. I'm Michael Krasny. We have a panel of experts with us fact-checking the election campaigns and trying to sift through the truth from the misleading and the outright lies in the ads and campaign claims of candidates for governor, Senate, and some of the state propositions, which we'll also touch upon. With us from Sacramento this morning is Evan Halper. He's Sacramento Bureau Chief for the Los Angeles Times. And also with us from the state capitol is Barbara O'Connor, Emeritus Professor of Communications with the Institute for the Study of Politics and Media at Cal State Sacramento. And Ken McLaughlin is with us this morning. He's in Los Angeles, political reporter for the San Jose Mercury News. And Ken, you were talking about a couple of those ads before we had to go to the break, and I wanted you to finish your thought, if you would.
I was saying that the Fiorina ad attacking Boxer for essentially destroying the economy by supporting the stimulus plan, I think, sort of is a false connection there. I think, you know, any objective person would say that the reason for California's rotten economy stems probably from a collapse of the housing and the credit markets, and any fair-minded person, I think, would say that, you know, you can argue whether the money was well spent on the stimulus, but I think almost any economist will say there has been an effect to that things are probably better than they would have been. And but at the same time, though, I think a lot of the Fiorina ads have definitely more of a ring of truth in painting Barbara Boxer as a, you know, as a traditional tax and spend liberal. I think, you know, her career could be interpreted as generally on the, you know, left of center in the Washington spectrum, and she is, I think, open to attacks on that front.
And what about, what about the attacks on Fiorina as being, you know, extreme because she's got Sarah Palin support and all that? Out there on the edge.
I mean, I think that Fiorina is, you know, probably open to charges. I mean, if you look at polling that's done, and, you know, Californians are generally against oil drilling, they're in favor of assault weapons ban, they're pro-choice. You know, obviously it's clever. I mean, Fiorina was endorsed by Sarah Palin in the primary, so that's factual. I think it's funny, of all the ads that we've heard today, probably that ad is probably one of the more accurate ones. I think where my colleague Mike Zappler in Washington says, you know, probably where they're going off a little bit on a tangent, where the Boxer ads imply that the Carly Fiorina is got us out to destroy, you know, Medicare and Social Security. She's talked about entitlement reform to some extent, as have a lot of Republicans and even some Democrats. But I think the notion that somehow she would slash Medicare and slash Social Security is an unfair charge. But I think on assault weapon, oil drilling, the choice issue, that she's open to attack. And she's certainly, I think, you know, bringing Sarah Palin in is, you know, obviously smart politically because she's not very popular in California. And Sarah Palin did endorse her. So she readily accepted the endorsement. So I think that charge is probably fair game.
Well, we're going to try to hear some more ads. We're going to go to your calls and emails. But first, I want to go back to Barbara O'Connor because you know, we've been talking about this campaign being just negative like so many in the past, maybe more money spent, maybe it's been increasing exponentially because of all the money that's been put in, particularly by Meg Whitman. But when you look at something like Proposition 23, it's like mailers gone wild, isn't it, Barbara?
It certainly is. And the you know, the underdogs, as they call themselves, are outspending the Texas oil billionaires 2-1. So those of us who know the facts kind of laugh at both the ads and the mailers. I mean, you know, clearly those consultants have decided that people have turned off their phones and are DVRing all television. I have probably gotten 25 mailers on that issue, slate cards, mailers, endorsement cards. So we've gone back to the future in terms of what they think is working. And I think they are correct at one level. I mean, it's kind of interesting. I don't watch television unless I can flip through the ads, and I've turned off my landline. And the people that we talk to are doing the same thing. So that's what I said. I think after this election, we'll have some digesting of whether all this negativity is really working and should money be spent.
Prop 19 is all mail, isn't it? Pretty much.
It really is, although with the Soros contribution, I think we'll see some ads if they can find any time to buy. You know, I made that point earlier. I've talked to the news directors, and everybody is just saturated and making money hand over fist on the ads that are coming out of the top two races.
Let me bring some of our callers in. Sharon, join us. You're on the air. Good morning.
Good morning. I was wondering if any candidate has ever sued another candidate for lying ads.
Ken McLaughlin, do we know here in California, has there been a lawsuit about lying in an ad, a campaign ad? I can't remember. Do you know?
Threatened to sue over the California Teachers Association ad,
mm-hmm,
but I think anybody covering a campaign knows that that's pretty much an idle threat. I mean, it's
the threat usually, not the...
It's usually the threat.
Yeah.
But it's just a way to say, you know, this ad is so bad that I'm going to take legal action. But it almost never happens. I can't recall, Barbara, it ever happening in California, can you?
Certainly not in the last 30 years. I mean, yes, the threat is there, and FPPC complaints are often made.
Right.
But, you know, being a public person excuses a lot, and the courts have upheld election speech as really just that. And so you're reliant on, you know, truth boxes, the other campaign, and the media to point out falseness.
Let me thank the caller. Let me go back to Evan Helper for a moment. On the propositions, there's been on both 23 and 26 a good deal of misleading, hasn't there?
Yeah, especially on 26, because that one is so obscure and confusing to most voters.
Actually, tell you what, Evan, excuse me. Let's hear an ad from 26 and then get your commentary.
While Californians are struggling, many politicians are living it up at taxpayer expense. Instead of passing a budget on time, they're pushing Prop 25, making it easier to raise their own expense accounts and easier for them to raise our income taxes, sales tax, and even taxes on our homes. We all want an on-time budget, but Prop 25 just means more spending, higher taxes, and fewer jobs. Put a stop to politicians' higher taxes and spending. Vote no on 25.
All right, that was no on 25, but let's get the comments from you, Evan, on this.
Yeah, 25 is probably confusing to voters also. It involves the number of votes it takes in the legislature to pass a budget. Right now, California is one of only, I think, three states that requires a two-thirds vote, and it's the reason we wind up stuck here till August and September when a budget's supposed to be done, you know, mid-June every year. And that ad was interesting because it talks about taxes. You know, the one provision of this Proposition 25 to make it possible for a majority to pass a budget in the legislature, meaning Democrats could do it without any Republican votes, is it has a provision that keeps in place the two-thirds vote for tax hikes. So that ad was all about tax hikes. Yet, you know, that Prop 25 would change nothing when it comes to broad-based tax hikes.
And 25 However, and 26 are really go together. I mean, they're connected at the hip, so to speak. You were starting to say about 26. I mean, this is pretty misleading as well.
Yeah, 26 involves fees. And there's, because of a court decision that happened a while back, lawmakers can, on a simple majority, pass fees, like the one that's being talked about now is a fee on oil companies that that is used to fund a oil spill fund. Or there's other fees. Often they're fees on industry that are used to fund programs or regulate those industries or fund programs that those industries. There's a nexus between the industry and the program that the fee is funding. So in the case of Prop 26, what it's asking voters is if they want to change the threshold for passing a fee, so it would require a two-thirds vote. This is backed by the Chamber of Commerce companies, you know, a lot of big business. So fees can no longer be passed by a simple majority vote. And the ad that the pro Prop 26 people are running, though, shows sort of some politicians sitting in a back room talking about padding their expense accounts and talking about, you know, their per diems and their salaries and how they just want to pass, you know, all these fees and, you know, all these taxes and not tell voters their taxes and use them, you know, to for their plush personal lifestyles. The thing is, Prop 26 has nothing to do with that. If these fees were the threshold for passing them were lowered, you still couldn't pass them and use them, you know, to fancy bottles of wine and traveling around the world and all that kind of stuff that sometimes politicians do, frankly, do with their campaign funds. But that's a whole different situation. So it's, and you talk to the Chamber of Commerce, which, you know, supported that ad. And they say, well, you know, look at this audit of the sewer you know, authority in the city of Bell, which we all know is really corrupt. And they use a certain fee illegally to, you know, pad their own expense accounts. And, you know, there was an audit those expenditures. And it turns out that what they did was completely illegal, Prop 26 or no Prop 26. So the bottom line is that this measure has nothing to do with expense accounts or, you know, lavish lifestyles of politicians.
Yeah, but Bell has been sort of rung into this campaign in many ways, so to speak. Let me bring in another caller. And Bill from Oakland joins us. Hi, Bill.
Oh, hi. Yeah. You know, I'm sort of curious about the use of this word failure in this election. And it seems to me that it's been used a whole lot more than in previous elections. And I'm just curious if there's been some campaign consultant that sort of recommended that these candidates use this word. It's sort of a fallback to high school. I mean, that's the last time, or maybe even elementary school, when people actually fail. And it's sort of hard for me to understand how you could attribute it to someone, especially like Jerry Brown, who's run for like 8 offices and won. I mean, how can you call that a failure?
You know, it's an interesting point. We are hearing that word a lot, aren't we, Ken McLaughlin?
Well, the Fiorina folks have a website called failedsenators.org, and you're right. The Whitman people have certainly stressed that over and over again, that, you know, this notion that somehow Jerry Brown failed at everything that he did. And, you know, I think one reason that consultants like that word is that it's really hard to dispute it, because I mean it's very subjective whether somebody failed or not. And I think it's probably when the voters are in a mood where they think that everything's going wrong and the country is on the wrong track, I think probably you have a focus group and they pick up on, you know, which key phrases, you know, really got people excited. So, but at the same time, you know, I sort of feel that is fair game. I think when the campaigns go overboard, it's when they just make stuff up.
Well, when they say that Jerry Brown was a...
That's what the reporters have to focus on.
I was just going to say, though, when they say Jerry Brown was a failure with the Oakland schools, that's
very, very deceptive, because, I mean, they sort of give the impression that somehow Jerry was the superintendent of schools in Oakland, which is just not true. And, you know, they even went as far as saying that he had control of the school board. He did get voter approval to appoint 3 members out of 10 of the school board, but it's hard to argue that he was, you know, the king of schools in Oakland.
Here's Gary in Oakland, one of our listeners, who says, I thought the governor race essentially ended in Jerry's favor when the ad paralleling Arnold and Whitman came out, and I thought this has been called the twin ad. This is about as famous in this campaign as maybe the ad about CNN and Clinton talking about taxes, which was a pretty strong distortion from the Whitman campaign. But let's hear this one.
Insanity is doing the same thing over and over again and expecting different results.
Insanity is doing the same thing over and over again and hoping for different results.
I have built businesses.
I built a business.
Met a payroll.
I entered this office beholden to no one. Except you.
I will owe my office to no one but you.
I don't owe anyone anything.
You need to run the state as a business.
Running this thing a little bit more like a business.
That is a very clever ad, because you can't see it here on the radio, but their faces merge. That is, Governor Schwarzenegger's face merges with Meg Whitman's, and obviously Barbara O'Connor. They've got the same consultants coming up with the same language. That is a pretty effective ad.
It's the same consultant, to be precise, but it's a fabulous ad. If I were to pick an ad out of all the campaigns, I like that one the best. And the reason I like it is because there isn't a second person making judgments. All you get is the images side by side, and the voter gets to make up his or her own mind. And that's the most effective kind of persuasion, especially late in this campaign when they're tired of being lectured. You know, the earlier caller, Michael, who talked about using failure, I think is illustrative of how afraid California voters are. And these ads have intersected with that fear and interpreted as anger what the voters are feeling. And I think it's more fear. So this ad is terrific because it treats voters as adults. and doesn't say, you know, doesn't lecture to them like a second grade school teacher would in a deep male voice. James Earl Jones is fine for, you know, wireless ads, but I don't really think he does the job in these lecturing kind of ads. So that's why everybody's embracing this ad, I think, is because it's very good persuasion.
But that brings up another question, Barbara, and I'm looking at an email from a listener named Mac who says he's curious if there is a particular socioeconomic education group for whom these ads have been composed. It seems to me, Mac writes, that the ads, radio, TV, or flyers in the mail, are very easy to tune out or ignore by an educated, at least partially savvy audience that recognizes they're vastly distorted and worth little informational value.
Well, I think Max is absolutely correct. And when you have 30 seconds, you know, if you're constructing a message in 30 seconds, you go for the lowest common denominator. And that's usually about the eighth grade. And you assume that people don't have any knowledge of the facts. And we've been talking about that all morning. That is the danger of 30-second ads, which is why the Twins ad is so effective, because it doesn't make a judgment. It lets you make the judgment. So it crosses socioeconomic, race, sexual boundaries and treats everybody as an equal. And that's why it's such a popular ad.
And let me go to more calls. Steve, you're on with us on Forum. Good morning.
Good morning. Once upon a time, it used to be against the law for commercial broadcasters to not check the facts of consumer ads that they accepted. So they had some liability for false claims that were made in their advertising. Does that still exist? And why wouldn't it apply to political advertising?
Well, it doesn't, does it, Evan Halper?
Well, when we were talking before about the CTA ad, I do recall there was some cease and desist orders went around from Meg Whitman's counsel. And I think actually a couple of stations, did in fact pull it. So there are some, if you have good legal counsel, you can, you might be able to bully some of these stations at, into pulling things from time to time. But I think, that cuts both ways for campaigns and you're of course in a glass house if you're the Whitman campaign. So I think they only wanted to use that card in a limited way.
Product advertising is different. It's regulated by the Federal Trade Commission. And there are – truth is an absolute defense, of course, in a lawsuit. But being a public person in political speech is a different category. And so, as I said earlier, and Evan is absolutely correct, you can rattle your saber, but it's really up to the stations. They're much more likely to take off a Tylenol ad that lies about its competitor if the issue is raised than they are a political ad because of political free speech.
Let me thank Steve for his call, and we'll go to another caller, and that's Colin. Good morning.
Hey, good morning.
Yes, sir. You're on the air.
Yeah, I had a couple of questions about a couple of ads that I haven't heard anybody comment on today about Meg Whitman and some of the decisions she made while she was at eBay. And in particular, one ad that I found, if it's true, it seemed pretty egregious to me that Meg Whitman in her last year at eBay took as much as $120 million in bonuses while laying off 10% of the workforce. And I was wondering if any of your panel could comment on the accuracy of those claims.
Yeah, Ken McLaughlin.
It is accurate that her compensation in her final year at eBay was $120 million, but it was actually her successor who laid off about 10% of the workforce, and that was due, primarily to the dot-com crash. But about a year ago, I worked with a fellow reporter, Pete Carey, on a story where we looked at Whitman's record at eBay. And, she's gotten very high reviews in terms, from the Harvard Business Review and business magazines. And the conclusion that we came to was that the first 7 years of her reign were very, very productive. The last three were probably lackluster. The irony being that, she cashed out during the lackluster years when the stock was soaring. Crashing by about 50%. So I think, it's not true. I mean, that ad certainly implies that Meg Whitman was the one who laid off the eBay workers, which is not true. But the $120 million figure is correct.
Let me thank the caller, and we'll get another call on, and that's Russ. Good morning.
Hi, how you doing?
Hi.
I have a
a comment and also a comment on the very last statement. It seems that journalists tend to equate the candidates as both having negative ads, and in the Whitman case, it seems that the distortions from the Whitman campaign are in a totally different league than the distortions in the Brown campaign, and I wish that journalists wouldn't try to be so fair that they just tend to equate the two as being negative. There are different levels of negative. And in terms of Meg Whitman's record at eBay, I actually wrote a story for the Bay Citizen a couple months ago that we did some research and showed that in the last 3 years, when times were tough at eBay, they were not so tough when she first got there. When times were tough, the last 3 years, the stock went down by 50%. The stock was cut in half under Meg Whitman, and the stock market in general was up during that time. That hasn't gotten very much attention. Thanks.
Okay, we thank you for the call. Let's hear another ad from the gubernatorial campaign.
Meg Whitman says she'll run California like her company.
Seen this attack on Meg Whitman? Who are these people? They're the unions and special interests behind Jerry Brown. They want Jerry Brown because he won't rock the boat in Sacramento. He'll be the same as he ever was. High taxes, lost jobs, big pensions for state employees. The special interests have chosen their governor. How about you?
Okay, there it is again, the unions and Jerry Brown, and we've been hearing a lot of that from the Whitman campaign. Evan Halper?
Well, I think it is reasonable for the Whitman campaign to point out that Jerry Brown is the unions are his surrogates. They are spending a lot of money in these independent expenditures, attacking Whitman, and his campaign has relied on them, even if he's not coordinating it, to help him out in a big way. But again, you know, the charges they're making that he's, you know, a tax and spend liberal, the taxes go up under him, that he coddles the unions, you know, that stuff just doesn't bear out from his career. You know, this is a guy who's been in public service for decades, and, he's been governor for two terms. And if you look at what he did as governor, he mostly was fighting with the unions because he wasn't what they wanted, and he was not raising taxes. He was holding the line on it.
All right, we're getting some criticism here. Here's Robert, who says, this show and the media in general does not describe or call out the different levels of distortion by each side. In general, the Republicans are willing to go to any extreme of outright lying as a policy. Today, your commentator said that the Whitman ad had outright lies for almost every point, where the Brown ad had a debatable single distortion. Yet you and the media make no distinction in levels of extremity and thus not clarifying how much more one side lies than the other. I think it's been implicit in a lot of this discussion that we've seen a lot more distortion from the Whitman campaign, and because we've seen more ads beginning in the primary with Steve Poizner.
That's right.
So I don't know where that caller's coming from. But here's another criticism directed at you, Ken McLaughlin. Listener Arthur writes, and at me, by the way, by saying that Boxer is vulnerable to charges that she's a, quote, tax and spend liberal, your LA Times correspondent accepts the negative pro-conservative frame that is biased against left-leaning thinking. Is that objective reporting? Why did you let that pass? I would expect better from the LA Times and your program. You want to plead on that one, Ken McLaughlin?
What I was saying is that of the two candidates, of Brown and Boxer, that Boxer is her career record. She was never the maverick that Jerry Brown was. I mean, Jerry Brown's whole theme, for anybody who was here in the 70s, was that this is an era of limits and frugality. And what I was saying is that I think the mistake probably that the Whitman campaign made was somehow by creating the narrative, you know, the way we're going to beat Jerry Brown is portraying him as a tax and spend liberal. Any fair-minded person who looks into Jerry Brown's record realizes that was probably not the case. And if anything, he was more on the fiscally conservative side than he was on the tax and spend side. But I think if you look at Boxer's record, I mean, she, along with other Democrats, you know, voted for the Clinton tax increases in 1993. She did vote for the stimulus package. And that, you know, Barbara Boxer, I think, you know, is a politician who is left of center on the spectrum. So all I was saying is that, you know, I think the ads that attack Barbara Boxer for being a tax and spend liberal have at least some ring of truth, where the Brown ads are not the case.
Let me go back to Barbara O'Connor, again, Emeritus Professor of Communications with the Institute for the Study of Politics and Media at Cal State University, Sacramento. I think the question in many citizens' minds is simply, how can you stave this off? What can you do about it to diminish just the outright lying and the distortions and the looseness of the facts? I mean, we've been talking about lawsuits, and there have been a couple of threats along those lines, but really, what can be done?
Well, it's a good question. And, you know, now that I'm retired, actually, I'm a little less neutral than I used to be because journalists was always taught to try to be fair. But I actually have looked at all the campaign reform measures that I have supported over the years. And with the best of intentions, we almost create more problems. So the PAP solution, and I say this as a college professor for 43 years, is to teach people the facts and to make sure that they understand and are immune to the 30-second spot. And that's a one-by-one person event. Public financing has long been talked about, and caps on spending, and, you know, trying to go at the numerical weight of ads on television, which are the large portion of any campaign budget. But it's, you know, Abraham Lincoln had the same problem. This is not a new problem.
No, it's where our journalists become particularly important, too, and vital.
Absolutely.
At a time when journalists are losing jobs and hemorrhaging jobs.
Absolutely. But, you know, the citizen journalism movement, the man who called in from the Bay Citizen, it's alive and well and growing, mostly on local races, but they're expanding. And, you know, I plan to spend the years of my retirement correcting the facts. And I think we have to create a culture where we do that. And, you know, that's a hard problem. And it's all about education and teaching kids to know the truth from false.
Well, I'm glad you put that challenge out to citizens as well as and journalists have done really, as I said, some of them yeoman work. And that includes some who are with us this morning. I want to thank Barbara O'Connor, Emeritus Professor of Communications with the Institute for the Study of Politics and Media at Cal State Sacramento. And Evan Halper, Sacramento Bureau Chief for the Los Angeles Times, and Ken McLaughlin, who is political reporter for the San Jose Mercury News. And thanks to you, our listeners. Thanks also to Senior Editor Dan Zoll and to our producers, Kevin Guillory and Judy Campbell, and our interns, Elena Kodvany, Aiden Stone, Suki Lewis. Our engineer is Danny Bringer, and our executive producer is Raul Ramirez. I'm Michael Krasny.
Funds for the production of Forum are provided by the members of KQED Public Radio and the Germanicos Foundation and the Generosity Foundation in honor of Louise and Claude Rosenberg.